like mic checks for people, you ask them what they had for breakfast.
I usually ask people about their favorite sandwiches whenever I do that. Yeah. It's actually not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Although I've done it to people and they didn't believe that I wanted them to answer it. So they'd go, oh, I like ham.
That's all you get.
It wasn't enough. I'd go, well, with
Give
what?
Me three sentences about what type of ham. Do you like smoked ham? Do you like honey glazed ham?
Welcome to the show.
Hello, and welcome to Room Temperature Suite. I'm your once and future host, Chris Walker.
And I'm a new man and self-made plumber, Santino Tartaglia.
We've got a really great show for you this month. We're going to talk about some stuff that came out last month that should be on your radar. We've got an interview with Austin, Texas-based band Honey and Salt, where we talk about South by Southwest making a record and nihilism in 2018. And finally, my co-host and I address some listener-submitted topics.
But first, here's what's coming up in April, things that you should look out for.
So we've got two albums for you to check out next month. The first comes out on April 20th, and it's called House of Wisdom, We Are the Devil by Polymath.
Now, you did say that it's coming out April 20th, and you did say it's next month, but that would be this month.
Oh, my bad. We're in March right now. It's currently, let me date this podcast, it's March 31st when we're recording this.
The day before Easter Sunday for all you Christian folk.
Yeah.
All right, so what can you tell me about this album, Chris? Because I haven't listened to it.
Well, I can tell you that we all wish the last Mars Volta album never happened.
Okay, so how does this rectify it in some way? Or
yeah, I mean, you can, if you close your eyes and think real hard, you can almost pretend that things went down differently. So if you are into cryptic titles, really long winding tracks, and the occasional jazz fusion breakdown, you can definitely get your 70s-inspired prog rock fix on April 20th.
So you're saying that this is basically the Mars Volta, but not the Mars Volta at all?
Exactly.
Oh, awesome.
Mars Volta, sans vocals, heavier.
Let's take a quick trip on over to the zoo. Giraffe's got a new album coming out. Is that you don't wanna ride this carriage with me? You don't wanna take the carousel with me over to the zoo?
Sorry, I wasn't expecting that good of a segue.
So Giraffes has a new album coming out called Memory Lame.
Yeah, on April 27th. And if you don't know who Giraffes is, the only possible explanation is that there was some kind of localized solar event that forced you underground and disabled all of your electronics for the past 13 years. And if that's the case, welcome back. A new Giraffes record is a tentpole release for the math community, so you've got some catching up to do before the 27th.
To be fair, I actually didn't know who Giraffes were until you showed them to me.
Yeah.
I think it was like a year ago.
Yeah, and I just want to take a quick moment and talk about how the tracks are arranged, because this is it's insane. So they normally have really, really long titles. They kind of like take that dumb like sentence-long title thing to the extreme. And this time, they've just gone completely overboard with it. So every track, there are like 6 or 7 quote-unquote songs. But at least as far as Bandcamp has it, it's split into 37 tracks.
So it seems like April's looking pretty solid.
April's looking pretty good. But the future is always less certain than the past. So March is now in the past.
Well, for our...
For our listeners, yeah. For us.
For us, that is today.
My interpretation of the past month is that there was a lot of really good, tasty releases that right now are currently available. So here are some hot and fresh tunes that you can dig into. March 6th, Good Luck Have Fun by Good Game. Good Game is a pretty new band. If you haven't heard them...
I haven't.
They have a really kind of chill vibe going on. Honestly, the thing that gets me about them is I don't know how they put out music so fast. They just put out either an EP or a debut album recently, and I was totally blindsided when this thing came out. I don't get how they make music this quickly. And somehow the quality doesn't suffer.
Damn. That's actually really intimidating and scary.
Yes. And after that...
March 13th,
Instrumental put out Reductio Ad Absurdum. This is really genty, if you're familiar with that term. Do you know what gent is?
Stuff like that.
Right. But what I don't like about gent normally is it's really predictable, and they all kind of use the same sort of themes and textures in their music. This is the complete opposite of that. So it still has that kind of djent effect if you like where that onomatopoeia comes from, but it's completely unpredictable. March 16th, we got the album We Do What We Can by Tangled Hair, and this one needs almost no introduction. Their last release came out 7 years ago, so people have been waiting for this for a long time, and there was a lot of really big Tangled Hair fans out there. And I have to say, after hearing track two by itself, I think 7 years was long enough to wait.
I don't really like having tangled hair, I'm not going to lie. It's actually kind of a bitch.
You've never listened to them before, right?
I've never heard them.
No. I'm not sure if you'd like it, actually. I don't know. I can't figure out sometimes.
That's the beauty of friendship. Sometimes you get to keep guessing.
Same day, Pentimento by Odurdeck came out.
This shit's so sweet!
Yeah, you like this one a lot.
Sure
did. I was really excited to see that Odurdeck put something new out because in 2016 they did a split EP with Spheris called Sunseeker. I really, really liked that one, and I thought the idea behind it was really cool. Instead of just doing a split where you write a couple songs and another band writes a couple songs and you jam it together, they wrote some songs by themselves, and then they traded members and swapped in and out, and they wrote some collaborative songs, which turned out to be a really, really good project overall.
So the first thing that I noticed about this album was the album art, which makes sense. For one, it was really cool looking. It was very colorful, and I don't know art well enough to compare it to something, but it looks very familiar to me. I went through this whole album without skipping a single track or even fast-forwarding through the whole thing twice in a row because it was fucking awesome. Tongue Nada.
That's not what that's called.
Well, it looks like it. Lingua Nada.
So March 23rd, we got a new album by Lingua Nada. You, I found out today, listened to a lot more Lingua Nada than I did.
I sure did.
Yeah.
Good friend of ours, friend of the show, James, Crispy James.
Yep, friend of the show, Crispy James.
Yep, he introduced me to them. He said, listen to this band. And he might have said something else about them, and I don't recall it right now because I didn't think of it before the show. But I listened to, he gave me two albums of theirs that I put on back to back. So I actually have no idea what the separation is between their albums. And what I really liked about listening to this album is I feel like I can add this new album to my old playlist of their music, and it just keeps going. And I really liked all of their old stuff. So this was really awesome to hear.
Yeah, that's cool that they sort of create like this one long, like super album you can put together.
Yeah,
that's nice sometimes.
It's awesome that they're doing that. Also, let's go back. Isn't lingua, that's not tongue, or is it lengua?
I think it's related to language in some way. So in a way, usually a lot of the roots of that word comes from mouth or tongue or whatever.
Well, yeah, but I thought lingua, like if you were to go get a burrito right now, isn't it lengua, L-N-L-E-N? Isn't that tongue, if you wanted a tongue, like a beef tongue?
I don't know. I have no idea.
All right. So let's go on to the next album.
Have you had beef tongue?
Yeah.
Is it good? I wanted to try it.
It's tender. It's really, really tender.
Yeah.
It is not.
I mean, I'm chewing on my own tongue right now, and yeah, I can see that. Going back, funny story about Lingua Nada. So a friend of the show, Crispy James, bought a Lingua Nada vinyl one time, and they took forever to send it to him. Like, I don't know what happened. I think they like missed the order or whatever, and he like forgot he ordered. He just like bought it one day and totally forgot about it, and it shows up on his doorstep one day with like a handwritten note that says, sorry for forgetting about you, here's the album you ordered. And they drew like a little steaming pile of shit on the on the thank you note, and to this day he's not really sure what that means.
Also, quick Google search. Yes, lengua is tongue. That is exactly what that was.
So no tongue.
Well, no, lingua with an I, I don't know, but lengua with an E.
Oh, this is totally unrelated.
Well,
all right. March 27th, Invalids Fulfillment EP came out.
Yo.
It's Invalids. You like Invalids. Not you, but you, the listener. You might. I don't know. I don't think you've ever listened to Invalids, have you?
Yeah. I listened to them while I was running a half marathon.
Yeah?
Yeah, they got me through miles 9 and 10.
Yeah. I don't think I really need to say much about this one because, I mean, everybody's listening to this has definitely bought this EP already. So,
If you haven't, then you're a lot like me in that you haven't heard of it and didn't know that it was happening until you read the show notes.
It was almost a stealth release. it was pretty, like, there was a very small amount of time between when they said it was happening and then when it came out. And I think that's awesome. I love when that happens.
Same.
3 days later, March 30th, 2018, The Planet U released a self-titled album.
Yeah, I haven't listened to it, so I have nothing to say.
This is my first time listening to The Planet U. This one, it was cool. There's a band I like called Feed Me Jack that they reminded me of. It's kind of this jazzy, dancey sort of thing, and the vocals typically are pretty sing-along. Feed Me Jack, I don't think, is making music anymore, so anything that's more like that, I'm into.
And now we get to go to Locto.
Yeah, same day they released Geo on March 30th, and you might remember us talking about this one last month. Surprise! It's as good as I thought it would be.
Yeah, it's a sweet album. For those of you who didn't listen to us last time and decided to keep listening to our podcast for some reason, now's your chance to double down and either not listen or submit and listen.
Yes.
Submit.
So that's it. That's our sort of top picks from March. It's not everything that came out. We have a full article that's up on the website that you can go check out. You can find that in our landing page. And it talks about everything that we covered on the site last month. A few weeks ago, I sat down with Wade and Austin from Honey and Salt. In discussing their upcoming album, we touched on music festivals, one of America's best music towns, and combating nihilism in the bleak landscape that is 2018. Let's go to the tape. Beautiful. That was very... Awesome. It's almost like you guys are musicians or something.
Yeah, we've been playing with each other for a while. So yeah.
Weird.
Yeah.
Weird. Very weird. All right. Yeah. So you guys are Honey and Salt, and you're based out of Austin, Texas.
Yeah. My name is Wade Allen. I play guitar and sing in Honey and Salt.
And my name is Austin Sears, and I play bass and do vocals in Honey and Salt.
Excellent. So you guys just got done with South by Southwest. Which for our international listeners, if they don't know what that is, just tell us, just give us like a little elevator pitch.
South by Southwest is a international festival that's like a week long, tons of artists.
Pretty much every venue in Austin just throws a show. There's shows happening all the time. Every band from the United States and international comes in. It's just like a week long binge.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not like Bonnaroo or... you know, ACL, where there's like a proper park where you play in. It's just all of these venues in Austin just open up their doors and have showcases. I think the most exciting thing about South by Southwest is that all the free stuff that goes on, to me and to us, I think that's like the way cooler thing to play, like the free shows, outside shows in people's backyards, house shows, stuff like that.
So basically the whole city kind of turns into a music festival where you're not just going to one place and like, you know, there's stages 1, 2, and 3. It's like anywhere you go in the city, there's something going on, right?
Pretty much.
I think South by Southwest as a company tries to bring in a lot of national acts and a lot of international artists. And so it's a good opportunity for like local Austin acts to play a lot more free shows and to at least American bands. Canadian bands as well, like try to book their tours around South by Southwest. We have the opportunity to play with a lot of bands from all over the country, all over the world. It's a great opportunity because a lot of our shows are like, hey, we drive a mile and we can play with these amazing bands from all over the world. It's pretty fantastic.
Pretty great.
And like outside of South by, is Austin like a music town? Like, is it generally good? Like, can you go in anywhere and see a good show in the end of the week? Or is it a little harder to find that sort of thing any other time of the year?
There's pretty much always more than one good show every single night in Austin, just depending on like the style of music you're into.
Other places, I mean, there are great places all over the country and the world to play music. But yeah, Austin's very special in that you get a really wide diversity of music and people live here just to play in bands. So there's a certain like cultural aspect to it where Austin like really promotes live music and they really promote musicians. And there's, you know, there are organizations here that, you know, you can get, you can have health insurance, you know, if you're a musician. It's like, it's really, really a good cultural environment for musicians that kind of fosters development and supports us as, you know, not only musically, but also, you know, from a psychological well-being perspective, you know, just to have us staying healthy and fit, if you will.
There are certain areas in the world where math rock is sort of, there are like hubs for it. Like, you know, the UK being one example, there's just like the per capita number of math rock bands is insane. And like Tokyo is another place. Like, is Austin like a particularly math town, or are you guys kind of like the only ones doing it out there?
Yeah, there's definitely a math rock scene here. It's definitely been growing the last couple of years, and we definitely feel like we finally picked up some traction kind of as a scene collectively, where, I don't know, the shows seem to be getting better. All the bands are pushing each other to get better. It's flourishing right now.
Yeah, there, I would say like in Texas, there's, especially in Austin, I think there's, math rock is still, it's popular, but it, I think Austin, you know, if you moved here, you say, what would be the music to see on any given night? Because there's so much music in Austin, it's not like the number one thing to, when you come to Austin for. I mean, there's in North Texas, there's some good math rock bands in Houston. So I think Texas has a lot of, you know, math rock and progressive bands that are phenomenal. And I think Austin is very open to a style of music we play, which is really, really good.
That's cool. I mean, do you guys ever feel like you get drowned out by like the more popular styles, or like if there's like a really popular like blues show or something going on down the street, like do you guys expect less people to come to your show that night?
You mind if I take?
Go for it.
Yeah, I would say that's really interesting. I think one thing that as a band, and I'm, you know, I don't think we're not going to speak for all like math rock bands in Austin, but we push ourselves to play with different styles of music in Austin, because I think that's really the only way you're going to get kind of any traction in the city, just to show that, you know, you're open to a lot of different styles of music. We love math rock, but we also love a ton of different styles of music. So we try to be very open about not, we love playing math rock shows, but when you have an all instrumental math rock show, in that sense, it might get drowned out by other shows in Austin.
I would hope there's nobody in the world that listens to math rock and like just likes that. Like there's a lot of crossover. Like a lot of people who like math rock also like post rock, also like shoegaze, also like hardcore. To sort of move into how you guys crafted this new record, if you guys just want to talk about that, talk about how you brought your influences into the new record for a little bit.
We play with a bunch of bands, a bunch of post rock bands that I've always been super, super into post rock. So I kind of like forced that into math rock songs. Same with the hardcore stuff. I think I played in hardcore bands back when I used to live in DFW. Yeah, like Gain and Fast Tempos, and Ben was the same way. He's super into that whole scene. And we both kind of just fed off that from one another. And
yeah, I think like, at least for Ben, like he, apparently he says this, when he first started the band, he didn't know what math rock was.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and just to interrupt, Ben is your drummer, right?
I'm sorry. Yeah, Ben is our drummer. And he sings on the album quite a bit too. So like, I mean, the one band that we can all kind of like, we love is probably the Mars Volta. And yeah, he didn't really listen to a lot of the more mathy or punk stuff that I listened to. He was coming at it from a different approach. I like played in more like punk bands. I liked a lot of stuff. Like At the Drive-In was probably my favorite band when I was like 17 or 18. When I first heard like a lot of the older like Don Caballero, and I was just like, that to me, that was kind of like, it was still kind of a punk band, but they were kind of getting weirder and more mathy, if you will. And then I think we all fucking love Terramellos a lot. So like I loved that kind of punk aspect of them. When I saw like Nick kind of finger tap and just do that crazy stuff, and I was just like, that's kind of the direction I want to go to, because I don't want to be in a, you know, it's cool to play punk music and I like that style of music a lot, but I wanted to kind of expand, push beyond that and just expand what I can do on guitar. So
yeah, I mean, just tone wise, I've listened to the new record, which there were some like definite Terramellos tones that I heard coming through. Like every now and again, I'll hear that like very specific sort of, I don't know what it is. It's like this kind of crunch. But yeah, I listened to your previous full length, and I noticed there's sort of a marked difference in the drumming from that album to this one. And you can hear that. You can hear his like his progressive influence. Even the way the drums are produced sort of took a whole different turn.
Yeah, we really we pushed the production, and that's mainly due to the guy who produced the album, Philip Odom, with Bad Wolf Recording. Who's actually like working with Will Yip now in Philly. So he's like, yeah, he's like moving on up. And yeah, we tried to make the production, we tried to really emphasize the production of the record, because the last album, Seams of Value, We recorded with our old drummer, and he was basically leaving the band before we recorded it. So he was like, I'll record the album with you guys. So it was really awesome of him that he did that.
But it was we literally tracked that entire record. Like, he tracked all the drums in one single day. Yeah. So, like, I think we did. He tracked the whole Seams of Value record in one day. Like, I think it was 14 songs we tracked or something. Absolutely insane. So that was, I don't want to say it was like a more of a rush job, but we just definitely did not have as much time to sit down with the, you know, actually like get a drum sound that everyone was happy with at every song. Like, hey, the snare head sounds dead. Let's replace it in the middle of the recording kind of thing. It's like that stuff we did on the new record that we just didn't have the time for on Seams of Value.
Yeah, and I think sort of how the drum tones became a lot more in your face contributed to there's like this like aggressiveness to this new record that is different from the debut. Was that something that you had intended for? Was that like an unintended consequence?
I think as far as like bass tone wise, I was definitely trying to like push like the amount of gain I was using and like have a dirty tone that I was really happy with while also being really happy with my clean tone. I think Ben was pretty conscious of like trying to have essentially like a metal sounding drum set in a math rock band. I don't know if it was, I don't know if you necessarily call them like,
if
they sound like metal, like a metal drum.
Yeah, we did talk, I remember him talking about how the drums wanted to sound and like, at least from my opinion, whatever it was worth at the time was like, I wanted to sound still natural, but I liked his style, you know, I didn't want to sound like a computer, like bass drum, that like a kind of robotic drum.
We had talked about tracking everything to a metronome, and we kind of decided against that. We felt like we were trying to like maintain that live energy that we have, because we pretty much like learned to playing drums with Ben live, because he joined the band and within like, I don't know, like 3 weeks started playing shows with us. Something.
Yeah, he played our album release of Seams of Value. Like, then we asked Ben, I was like, hey, can you learn all these drums, learn this album? And he did it, and it was pretty incredible. Yeah.
So I heard you say that you guys recorded your own scratch tracks. Now, that's something that we've done in our own band, but it's been my experience with other bands. They don't always do that. Did you guys always do that in previous bands? Is that something you guys just picked up in this band?
It was difficult. I mean, I think next time we record it, we're going to try a metronome. Yeah. But we wanted to capture the live energy from the album. And I think at the time, I don't remember correctly, but I think Ben just felt more comfortable just playing it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he's like a built-in metronome in a lot of ways. Like, his tempo is pretty consistent. And that's what we were worried about. But once we did a couple of tracks, we listened back and did kind of the BPMs or whatever. And then we were all just like, yeah, that sounds consistent. Great. Yeah. And our producer, Phil Bodum, he was pretty happy with the way the tempo was consistent throughout each song.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to talk a little bit more about the way you guys write songs. Do you guys sort of have one person that comes to the band with like an idea first, or you guys just kind of take it riff by riff?
There are a few riffs on the album that Austin had developed, and I was just like, I already had a bunch of other riffs, and we kind of like, oh wow, that actually kind of works in this capacity. And he would learn like one riff and he would develop it in another like cool and interesting way. I would come in with like two or three riffs at a time, and I would have like a structure developed. I would say a couple songs I had the whole song. I think the fourth track on the album, Myths, I think I just had it down
pretty much
down completely.
I'd say like a lot of times Wei would come in with like two or three parts that he felt like worked pretty well together on guitar. And he would just present them to me and Ben, and we would kind of jam on them like part by part. We're pretty honest with each other in the practice space, whether like something's working or not, or if like that's a direction we want to take the song.
I tried to be very like collaborative about the album in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I think we've kind of matured as a band and just as like songwriters. Talking about like math rock, we've definitely tried to like intentionally try to not all three do crazy shit at the same time, because we would used to write like that, and we like a lot of math rock bands that do that, but we were trying to create an album that's like more accessible for the
people who aren't just super hardcore into like shreddy instruments.
Yeah, yeah. Mathrock.com, what is this?
No. No, but it's just like a really, it's really refreshing when there's just like something that's actually fun. Like, and it's not a serious like sit down and study kind of a thing, you know what I mean? Like, you can still enjoy it. Like, there's depth there and there's like layers if you want to peel them away, but like ultimately, like you said, like it lends itself to a live setting. There's a lot of like sing-alongness to it. Well, like, you, all three of you do vocals.
Sometimes all three of us do vocals, but
I would, that
there's a couple parts, but
most of the harmonies are Ben and I. Yeah. And Ben and I, and then Austin is more like the screamo guy.
Is that term still cool? Like, if
I were to say screamo, do I have to like censor it? I'm okay with your, if you're okay with it. I just want to know if you want me to edit it.
No, I mean, I don't know. I
usually just call it like yells. I don't even like.
Yeah,
screams,
I guess he's the screamer. Like, I'm not saying we're a screamo band, but
I'm the loudest voice.
He's the loudest voice. Yeah, yeah.
Loudest boy in the band.
Was that your Texas impression?
Yeah, we're down in Texas. We got three things: cattle, South by Southwest, and one loud boy.
One Russian bass tone.
I can't come back from that.
Do you guys?
We can do a hard cut if you want, and then just
do you guys
hit the clapboard?
Of course. Do you guys write lyrics as a group, or is that something that just one of you takes on and draws personal inspiration from? Or
I would say
the previous album.
The previous album was basically mostly me, mm-hmm. And then I was trying to. I think we had like maybe half of the record demoed, or the instruments. And I would come into practice. My background is like, I write guitar parts first, and then I try to like create melodies over it. Or like, at least I like a guitar part that's kind of poppy, and I'm like, okay, I can conceive of some vocal melody over it. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to try like 5 to 10 variations and see what happens. I think at least both of us agreed that I would write less like dense, like philosophical lyrics. I would repeat lyrics more, and I would just sound less pretentious, essentially. I think that's kind of was the, Austin was like really, really good at like at reining me in and telling me to shut up when I'm writing too many lyrics, because I can kind of like
if you listen to our EP, there's like some like 6 or 7 syllable words on that record, and stuff like that. Like,
it's just
it's a little
top.
Much.
Yeah, it was, you know, on reflection, yeah. Like
you just come in with a treatise on nihilism and. Fully formed.
Yeah, that's like, yeah, I don't write a lot of philosophy, so this is like my writing. So sometimes Austin's like, dude, this sounds like you're writing a philosophy journal over here. You gotta like chill out a little bit.
And a lot of times
you're saying that a lot. Do you have a background in writing philosophy?
Oh yeah, so mainly because like a lot of it's like my like philosophy background. And so, I was teaching at Austin Community College for a while. So I was teaching Intro to Philosophy and Ethics. So a lot of the things on the record are more of like my ethical dilemmas, my personal / political takes on the world that we're living in now. And Austin is good in that we can disagree on some things, but he kind of agrees with me like on the theme of the record that we were trying to respond to a lot of people that we know, friends, acquaintances, coworkers, what have you, that are, way too nihilistic, and they kind of give up on having values or meaning in the world, and we were kind of getting fed up with that, and
we noticed a lot of that post-election and like pre-election build-up too.
We say this sometimes. I don't think we're like a political band per se, but we definitely can't ignore these issues. So a lot of the lyrics are more subtle, and they're more, I think, more personal in a lot of ways, because a lot of it is me trying to deal with my lack of my parents ever listened to this, my lack of religious beliefs, and the notion of having like some kind of objective value in the world, and try to have meaning in my life. And my other beliefs that coincide with that and might possibly conflict with that is that, the universe seems like one big cold, empty void that has no meaning. So that's my dilemma. And a lot of this record is me trying to stay positive and trying to move on from that.
We both value like a positive outlook and like trying to do things and gear your life towards supporting stuff that you enjoy and is helping the world. Helping.
Yeah, we kind of both grew up in Texas, and not Austin, which is kind of a, you know, I would say like fairly liberal bubble, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so we both grew up in like really conservative backgrounds. Like my dad was a preacher when I was a kid. So like I was very religious when I was a kid. And like, I think that's really the reason I majored in philosophy, just because I found this like discipline that was really open-minded, and you can basically say whatever, not whatever you want, but you can have any kind of crazy thought, and philosophers will humor. They'll take it like, seriously. Yeah. And I think that that really like made me like kind of obsessed with it.
Yeah. But I mean, Math Rock itself is a pretty, on the whole, like in apolitical kind of genre. I mean, do you guys find it important to sort of put that stuff into your music, and do you find it important that people get that out of it?
That was a conscious, I remember we had several conversations about that as well, where we were, not that we didn't have a choice, but we kind of felt compelled that as artists and as creative people, like we should stand up and say something.
Yeah,
especially given the time that we find ourselves writing this record in.
I think Austin and Ben and I, we all talked about it, and we're like, yeah, we have to have a record that has some lyrical content where we're not blind to what's going on right now, or we're not like, hey, here's a bunch of like, you know, three white dudes that are pretty well off, and we're not going to talk about anything shitty right now. We didn't want to do that. So we wanted the lyrics to have some content and meaning, and you know, there's a lot of math rock albums I love, and a lot of vocal melodies I love on it. But I look at the lyrics and I'm like, what is this person saying? I have no idea. Not that I'm like disappointed in it, or I'm just like, I kind of want more. And that goes back to my more like punk background, where I, you know, listen to a lot of bands where the vocals are, there's some kind of deeper meaning behind it.
I just want to thank you guys for coming on and sitting down and talking to us. Tell us where we can find your album. Tell us when it's going to be out.
Yeah, it's out April 6th. Out on Spartan Records, which is a really great label out of Seattle, Washington. It's pressed to vinyl. John Fraser does an amazing job there. We're gonna have like really cool variants on the vinyl, so like we're really excited about that. I think it's gonna be on Bandcamp for digital download and all the other kind of digital music services, Spotify, Google Play, and all that stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And to anybody listening, I saw those vinyls, I saw those variants, and they're sick. You're going to want one of those for sure.
Yeah,
they look, yeah.
Turned out so well.
So I hope you enjoyed listening to that interview. I hope you found it as enlightening as I did. I had a really good time talking to those guys. But real quick, before we move on to our next segment, I wanted to just mention something our staff worked incredibly hard on recently. We put out an article called 100 Greatest Math Rock Albums You've Never Heard. It's lesser known stuff that doesn't have the name recognition of, say, your Chons or your Invalids, but it's absolutely worth your time. It's all been handpicked by us, so it's by no means a definitive list of anything, but I know you'll find a hidden gem in there somewhere. So check it out.
So moving on.
Moving on.
So Chris, you just told me that you tried to get some listener questions up and going.
Yeah, I asked for some listener questions, either questions or topics for this month's episode on Facebook, and a decent number of people responded, so I think we should just try and cover it all. All right. So going right to the Facebook page, let's take the oldest question I see here from Killian. Killian asks, math rock and sport, a kinesthetic approach of musical performances.
I'm going to assume, because you and I talked about this real briefly, that he doesn't mean the band sport. I'm going to assume that he means how listening to it might make you want to move.
Sporting events, yeah.
Sporting events, or as I had mentioned earlier, I used Invalids to get me through a marathon.
Right.
It worked very well. It was actually very motivational in a wanting to dance sort of way, just because the rhythms kept changing and things. I never felt bored, and I would get into smaller rhythms. And this might seem weird, but getting into a bunch of smaller rhythms helped me move because I was constantly changing my rhythm.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe what he's trying to say is sort of math rock as the idea of sport, as the idea of a physical activity, an expulsion of energy in some way, conversion of ATP in the body forced out through kinetic action.
Very good segue for Jeremy's, I don't know if it's a question, zoo books?
Jeremy just says zoo books.
Okay, I read them when I was young.
I never got zoo books.
I read them. I remember reading one about a duck, and they had a picture of a man holding a balloon, and they said, this is like a duck. Went, okay.
Luca asks, fulfillment EP. We talked about that already, Luca. Keep up. Come on.
Yeah, we sure did.
Devin asks, 5-4.
Yeah, we can discuss that.
That's a good time signature. I like it.
Yes, we've used it in our own writing.
Yeah, I like playing 5-4. I find it's a really good way if you are just getting into on-time signatures. 5-4 is a really, really easy one to slip into because at like its base, and I know there are going to be a lot of nerds out there who fight me on this one, but it's just adding another quarter note.
I mean, yeah, that's essentially all it is. And what's really interesting, a lot of songs, a lot of popular songs out there. I mean, obviously you have like your Dave Brubecks and all that shit, but you'll find it in bands that maybe you don't think of as math bands. For example, And You Will Know Us by the Trail of Dead. One of their most popular songs is 5-4, and I listened to it for 10 years before I ever found that out.
Will You Smile Again by And You Will Know Us by the Trail of Dead.
Hell yeah.
I'd actually be really interested to see, and if somebody who is a better journalist than me can put this together, but if they could sort of put together like a retrospective of odd time signatures in popular music, like maybe in top 40 hits.
But do you want this in America? Because in other countries... what we like 5-4 is popular in other countries, whereas to us it's not popular.
Yeah, so I'm just talking about American top 40 music. I want like an article that outlines like, bet you didn't know.
Yeah,
this song was in 716 or something.
Somebody hit us up with that one.
Yeah, if you have seen this article before and I just didn't find it, then please send it to me because I want to read that.
One thing that Nick suggested, speaking of suggestions, he suggested Metallica. And the only thing that I really want to say about Metallica, other than all the stuff that went happened, Napster, da-da-da, was the loudness war and what they've done for it, which is the war where audio engineers talk about compression and whether or not things need to be compressed and blah, blah, blah. Long story short, Guitar Hero got tracks for the Metallica album Death Magnetic. Is that what it was called?
I think that's it, yeah.
Yeah, they got tracks that weren't mastered, so they weren't as compressed. And then when Metallica actually released the album, they were very, very compressed. And the response from the community was, hey, can you guys release the uncompressed versions? They sound better. And I would agree with that opinion. They didn't sound as, compressed, which is nice. And
So you're saying the Guitar Hero version got, like, the better sounding, in some people's opinion, the better sounding versions.
Yeah, which I
didn't know that.
Yeah, I guess it was a mistake, but the band's response, or at least as it was shown to me, and it's been years, so I haven't researched this, so maybe I'm wrong here, is they just said, you'll buy whatever we put out. And I was like, fuck.
I hate to argue with that, but, like, it's true. Metallica fans, like, as much as they can, like, say that they hate X album by Metallica, like, they're going to buy it, and they're going to buy the box set, and they're going to buy whatever, like, tour t-shirts they release or whatever.
Yeah. So speaking of tour t-shirts, Colin came in with a really good one that we really shouldn't address here, but I just want to real brief, how to set up a successful tour and not fail horribly. I think that's a really good idea and something that we should talk about. However, I've never been on tour.
Yeah, me neither. I think that's a great topic for a future show, and Colin Phils, we will hit you guys up about that later.
Yeah, if you guys have been on a successful tour, tell us. Or if you've been on a failing tour.
Yeah, I want to hear about that also. If you have like really terrible tour stories,
come
talk on the podcast about it.
Yeah.
Next, Senyo asks.
He says, what's the name of your podcast?
Room Temperature Suite. Jonathan asks, LOL, the faceless, who's that? John Nyblock says, me. John, respond to my email. Avery asks, Cardiacs, Nick Hunter, if you're listening to this right now, you should do a story on Cardiacs, because you can do that way better than I can, and you can give those guys the justice that I can't provide.
So Alex comes in and says, why don't you guys talk about math rock?
Nah.
That's kind of complex. That's a bit out of my wheelhouse.
Juan asks, how about the people who are wounded by not being included in the 100 best obscure albums? They need a support group.
And I have a support group for them.
Yeah.
This thread. Just come in here and post it.
You can just continue. You guys can start it in that sub thread on our Facebook page. You can sort of use that as your message board for this support group you want to start.
And we'll come in and look at it.
Yeah. And I'm serious. If you want to type out a strong letter, I will read that on the air. I will do anything.
Yeah. If you guys have, I mean, Chris had said earlier, it's not a definitive list, but if you guys have other things that were missed on that list, hit us up with it.
Yeah. Maybe we'll make a 100 bands upset about not being included in the list.
This next one, I'm going to skip ahead. It's a man named Alex, but someone else did the same thing. It is Zach. Zach came in and said, self-promotion, and they both posted links to their bands.
Yeah, this is kind of the same thing. And we can talk about this a little bit.
Yeah, so I'm not going to talk about their bands, not because I think that they're bad or anything. I didn't have the time to go in and listen to them, but I wanted to come out and say I'm actually pro self-promotion. I really have nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm pro self-promotion to a certain point. So we have always treated Fecking Bahamas more like a community than anything else. And I think what happens is, I mean, you can go into our visitor posts, and there are some people that just kind of come in and they drop a link to their band and then that's it.
Yeah.
And I know it's really important to get your stuff out there. I mean, we have to do the same sort of thing with this website and this podcast, where you just have to find outlets where people are looking and you have to get eyeballs on your stuff. But at a certain point, I think there is like an etiquette that has to be observed. So the way it is when you just kind of come in and drop a link and you don't engage and you don't have anything really to add to the conversation, it's like you just drove by in your car and threw it out the window at us. And now I'm sitting here covered in whatever you were drinking from the fast food restaurant you just came from.
So very weirdly, I agree with everything you said. However, I'm going to say that I'm still pro people doing that. And the reason is, I think it's very obvious. I think that if someone doesn't engage in the community, just walks in, markets themselves, walks out, and doesn't engage with people, I think that is still self-promotion. And I think that maybe it'll come back and hurt the way that other people see you, you know?
Maybe. I think if you're going to do that, the best thing you can do is talk to other people.
Yeah.
Engage with other people that are there, kind of see it more like a, I guess see it more like a forum than just a posting board, you know?
Yeah.
Like this isn't the cork board that's in the atrium when you leave Guitar Center.
I think that they removed that cork board.
Is that not there anymore?
At our local Guitar Center.
Oh man.
Yeah.
That was always the source of the best comedy.
Another source of comedy could be
Slayer. Micah Jones wants us to talk about Slayer. What? I'm not going to talk about Slayer.
Wait, where is he?
I'm just not going to do that.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Sorry, Micah. I don't know if that was serious or not, but you could talk about Slayer. You can start a podcast about Slayer, and you can mention our podcast on it.
I've heard a rumor, maybe you know if this is true, I heard that Slayer, they got their name because they were called Dragon Slayer, and then they shortened it to Slayer.
Yeah, so, yeah. And there's a quote, I'm not going to repeat it because it's kind of disgusting the way they, why they're not called Dragon Slayer, but you should go look that quote up.
So Gabriel comes in, and he says, Polyrhythms most popular in math rock, and a little underneath it, someone decided to give us an example of a polyrhythm.
Yeah, Alignaj gave us this example of a polyrhythm.
Does he not know? Does he think that we don't know what a polyrhythm is? I'm not sure what else to take away from that, because I don't know if it's his band or not, and I don't know if that was self-promotion, but hey, everybody, that was a polyrhythm.
Hey, yeah, he's just a friendly guy coming in. He's like, I got some polys right here in my back pocket. Let me just pull them out for you.
All right,
lay them out on the table, and you can look at them. You can touch them if you want to. You don't have to.
I would present, though, that Gabriel's question wasn't, what is a polyrhythm? It was, which ones are most popular in math rock?
Yeah, I think Gabriel wants us to do a survey of all math rock, and he wants us to collect data about which polyrhythms appear most frequently. Though, frequency is only one measure of popularity, because we could be talking about public opinion also.
So let's talk about both of the above by saying, if you guys are familiar with any of the above, let us know, because that actually would be interesting and something I would want to talk about, but I don't want to spitball.
Yeah, I'd want to see a real statistical analysis here.
Yeah, so if any of you guys have been hot on the presses, or I don't know.
If you're doing a thesis.
Yeah, let us know.
Yeah. Send it our way. Send us all your raw data.
David says, Tricot American Tour. How they met Chan, their first tour, and how Chan in Polyphia played South by Southwest House Shoe together in 2014 -, which spawned the relationship.
I did hit up David about this afterwards.
Yeah.
And I said it there, and I'll say it again. David, if you want to write that story, because it sounds like you know something about that from personal experience, send it to us. You can record it and we'll play it on the air. Yeah. Or you can just give us all the facts and we'll help you find that story. Because that sounds really cool.
Yeah. I've always wanted to know about a house shoe.
Yeah. I've never been to a house shoe before.
I have. There's a place called Storyland, like an hour and a half, 2 hours away from here.
Oh, right.
I went there as a child. They had a house shoe that you could enter.
The old woman lived in the shoe.
You know what I'm talking about.
Stuart says, Leeds premier DIY math rock festival. And I think he's talking about Strange Forms.
I didn't know what he was talking about.
Yeah, so Strange Forms is really, it's a good festival, and it's just like another reason that the UK is the place to be for math rock. So either if you're going or have gone, you will see or will have seen bands like Rollo Tomasi, Valerian Swing, Alpha Male Tea Party, which I would go to the UK just to see that, Polymath, who we talked about before, Vasa, Adam Betts is playing, which that's another reason you should go see it. So
maybe we should record, just in case this is in the past, like a reaction to like a tragedy that might have happened there. You know what I mean?
We should like leave spaces so we can sort of insert names and dates.
Yeah,
and
it will come in and record
tragedies.
So for like example, I can't believe that came and wiped out the whole show.
Yeah. Let's take that clean. Let's go back, right? Let's get a nice clean cut and you can start again and I'll react.
I can't. At the Leeds Festival, did you hear what happened?
Okay. Oh God, Strange Forms 2018. It was such a tragedy. Came through and
there were so many toddlers with spitballs. Just spread germs around. It was gross. But Purell made a killing, am I right? So Eric came in and he said, how Don Cab is way overdue to come out of a hiatus and make a new album and then do a tour.
And then what I don't appreciate, Eric, is that you tagged Don Caballero, and I don't know if you noticed, but we're stealing from them right now. We are the name of our website, the name of our podcast. We didn't ask to do that.
Listen, kid, you a snitch? Do you know
Eric,
what we do?
Yeah, I think Eric's selling us out to Don Caballero.
Listen, Eric.
Last question. Benjamin says, Little Cavalier Festival 2018, and I did want to talk about this because not only does it actually look like a really good festival, but it's for a very good cause. So, as I think everyone knows, and if you don't know, Dan Beasley from Cleft had stage 4 brain cancer.
Horrible, man.
And I say had because 2 days ago, as of the recording of this podcast, he got his scan results back and he is cancer free.
That is fucking awesome.
And that's insane.
That's fucking crazy.
Because, I mean, to find out you have cancer and then find out you have brain cancer is, I couldn't imagine. So he set up a Just Giving page, which I think you can still donate to. At this time, it's raised about £77,000, which is 77% of his target. Those donations came from about 1,300 people, and that's a crazy amount of money to raise. I'm sure his bills are way higher than that. I'm basing that on medicine in the United States, which is vastly overpriced. I really, really hope it's better in the UK, but I don't know enough about their system of medicine to say for sure whether or not his bills are higher than that. But the nice thing about Little Cavalier Festival is they say they're donating all of their profits to help Dan. So even though Dan is cancer-free, he probably still has a ton of bills to pay. So if you can give to this page, if you can go to Little Cavalier, go do it, because for your money, not only are you helping a man who made great music himself, you get to see some great music. You can see on Saturday, the 26th, Gallops, Polymath, that's two festivals of Polymath, A Werewolf, Body Hound, False Hope for the Savage, I don't know who that is, Mayors of Toronto, don't know who that is.
Oh, I mean, it's right in the name. They are the Mayors of Toronto.
Oh, I should have known.
Yeah.
FES UK, which I believe is Flat Earth Society, and I did a review of their EP.
Hey.
Either last year or 2 years ago. I can't remember. And Shywood. Then on Sunday.
How do you know they're going to be there?
Well, there's a Facebook event page that you can find in our link dump.
No, I thought I was going to make a joke with Shywood and how shy people, you never know there. And then I realized that I didn't make the joke and said I just said a sentence.
I'll give you credit for it. I appreciate the effort.
Thanks.
It was good.
Also, on Sunday, which is the day after the Saturday, on Sunday there's going to be even more awesome bands, which honestly, just go look it up. You'll see it all there, and it's a fucking stacked list.
Yeah, check out the Facebook event page.
$15.
Where you can get tickets. £15.
Sorry, £15.
So that about does it. That was your questions this month. I hope we have helped you in some way. I hope you got something out of that. I didn't. I'm not a different person now. I'm the same as I was before. I'm just as ignorant and terrible as I was when I started.
I mean, Chris is saying that, but I'm watching him order zoo books right now, so it's not even true.
I gotta catch up.
Yeah. So last episode, we introduced a segment called Inbox Zero. This month, we were trying to shorten the length of the episode, so we're still trying to figure out that balance, guys, so bear with us while we do that. This time, we're only going to talk about the latest one that was sent to us, only because we didn't have a full-on review of it, which is the album called The Bottom by a band called Flora. It is a four-piece band from Huntsville, Alabama. They released a seven-song album. That's what it is. It actually reminded me a lot of about 10 years ago when I first got into math rock, like when I was listening to mostly instrumental post-rock, but people started doing and writing these like interesting rhythmic hooks. Tonally, it sounded a bit DIY. It's honestly, and I hate saying this negative stuff, the drum tone was very flat for me, which was very noticeable when he would like ride a crash and most noticeable when he would hit a snare. But that was the only negative I had for the album. Musically, I thought it was really well written. There were slide guitars, which were unexpected and very textural and very awesome.
I like slide guitars.
No, it was really cool. So I really like this album a lot, and I would recommend it, even if like DIY drums sound like DIY drums. It's really not an issue. I mean, it's an issue if you give a shit. That was the only one that I had looked into this month.
And I didn't do any. I'm really sorry.
No, that's okay. You had to put together the rest of the show, which... You did a good job, so thanks for that.
Oh, thanks. We might have more Inbox Zero for you next month. If you guys like that segment, vote now on your phones and tell us if you like it, and we'll bring it back next month. We'll probably like do one or two, maybe. But if things are starting to run long like they have this time, then you know we'll give you a couple quick ones.
Let's talk about what we've been listening to this past month.
Yeah.
That isn't math rock.
So what have you been listening to this month?
This month, the album Glacier Park by Danny Clay.
Mm. Tell me about it.
One of my favorite albums of all time.
Yeah?
Yeah, it is an arrhythmic album that I remember reading about it when I had bought it at the time, which was about 2 years ago or a year ago. He apparently likes to use like children's toys and all these weird things to make a bunch of sounds. But they're recorded analog, so it's a bunch of digital sounds, but they sound like they are in a space. And then they are just layered on top of each other. It never gets to a point where you feel like there's like a song. It doesn't have the normal structure of a song where there's like a beginning, middle, end. It's hard to explain, but it's been one of the best albums I've ever listened to. For me, it's really good to listen to in writing because it's not invasive. It doesn't take over, but it creates a very good mood. I fucking love that album.
So I guess I want to ask what is like your benchmark for a rhythmic or ambient music? Like, does it need to like hit certain criteria for you, or is it just kind of like you know it when you see it?
There are things I can point to. So Danny Clay, I mean, for anyone who's in the community, they'll know the name Tim Hecker, like the album Virgins, which is a phenomenal album for me all the way through and through. The thing that I look for most is tones. Earlier I'd mentioned that like the drum tone of a certain album didn't resonate with me. That does not work for me on something that's like arrhythmic and just kind of a bunch of sounds. If your tones aren't recorded well, if they're not good tones, I'm lost in the album because it's not about the musicality of it anymore. It's kind of about presenting a space. And for me, that's what gets me in. In some cases, and I'll use Tim Hecker once again, that same album, that album scares the shit out of me. It's like the scariest album I've ever heard. But unlike like a, I don't know, some stupid Halloween CD where it's like,
yeah,
I mean, booga booga or whatever.
I'm picturing just like, kind of like atonal violin, like doing that sort of squeal, like I guess like you would hear in a horror movie.
Yeah,
is that far off or is that kind
Very, of? That's super far off. Actually, here's the album cover, right?
Oh yeah,
and there's nothing about it that's scary.
I think it's scary in its own way.
But to give you my benchmark though, and this album really does it well, and the album art I think shows it is it suggests. But it isn't what you think it is.
Yeah.
Right? And this album suggests fear to me in a way that is maybe allegorical, maybe even hyperbolic. And for that, but it doesn't overdo it and it's not cheesy. And for me, that was the driving force. And it actually, like, if I listen to it at the wrong time, I want to piss my pants.
I've also been listening to something more ambient, which I haven't done in a while. I kind of got away from. I used to listen to almost exclusively post-rock for like 2 years.
Yeah.
And I kind of got away from that. I think just because the genre started to bore me a little bit. Like I felt like I kind of figured out everything that was going to happen. So I was just at work and I was looking for something a little bit lighter to listen to, something that wasn't so invasive because I had to really concentrate on what I was doing. And I found this post-rock group. I think it's two guys called the Gentlemen Losers. And
friend of the show, Crispy James, he's given me an album of theirs.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, I liked this one a lot. Actually, let me find the name of it because I put it on. And honestly, I kind of like kept it on repeat at work. And I didn't look at the title. Like I looked at it the first time and I kind of didn't go like any deeper than that. So this has just been like what's in my... like in the background of all the stuff I've been doing like 5 days a week for 8 hours a day. So it is two brothers from Finland. And the album is called Permanently Midnight. So I really don't have anything profound to say about this other than it kind of did something for me that post-rock hasn't done in a long time. And it's that it hooked me and it did a lot of really unexpected things. That kept me interested the whole way through. I could never really predict where it was going to go next. And that's not usually an attribute about post-rock that you would expect to see or maybe you'd even look for.
That's what led me to math rock.
Yeah. So I think this one's really great. It came out like a couple of years ago, and apparently this band's been around for a while, and I just totally, like, they were just out of my purview. And it was kind of nice to come back to it. It was like I rediscovered something that I used to be really, really into. And it was nice not to come back to something that I was really, really into and find out it was not all it was cracked up to be. It was nice to find something that reminded me of why I liked it in the first place.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Because I went through a very similar thing that you did with the waxing and waning of post-rock. Maybe I stayed in it for a bit longer, but I entirely understand.
Room Temperature Suite is produced and hosted by Santino Tartaglia and me, Chris Walker. Nick Hunter is our managing editor. This month's story was contributed by me. Our theme this month is the 7-inch version of Floorboards by Roz and the Rice Cakes. Exit theme is Olympic Park by Couch Tigers from the album Apple Tree Turtle Tooth. Bump music this week provided by Honey and Salt, The Robot and Me, Views from Mount Fuji, Hakanai, and Hunter Gatherer. Find links to those songs and everything else we mentioned on this show's landing page at feckingbahamas.com, along with our full catalog of articles, interviews, videos, and tons of other content. Email us with stories and ideas for the show at roomtemppodcast@gmail.com. This episode was recorded in Santino's basement in the slowly warming state of Rhode Island.